You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 271st edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 880th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of November 17th, 2022, a mere 20 hours before the first big game of the season. I am your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. This week's banner moment is just a simple realization, one that Indiana's roster is more complete than at any time in the last 5 years. When watching the first two games that Indiana played, you saw a solid nine-man rotation where each man brought strengths individually that helps the team collectively. This also is supported by watching the other teams in the NCAA over the past week and a half. When watching Michigan State, we can easily see that the roster Indiana has is capable of playing like Michigan State, beating Michigan State, and Michigan State's played against some quality competition. This roster is built to win. It is built to handle adversity, which will come at some point during the season. The roster is one that we grew accustomed to over the storied past of Indiana basketball. Now, this roster just needs to win consistently, and let's hope that starts on the road this Friday in Cincinnati against Xavier. Okay, now let me introduce my co-host this week. Jared is off tonight pulling double kid duty with his wife, desperately cheering on the Packers to salvage their season. He'll be hosting tomorrow night's post-game show after the Xavier game. But here with me, still reeling from the Eagles' first loss of the season, is the Ted Lasso of girls sports coaching in Cincinnati, the president emeritus of the Robert Johnson Fan Club, and a giant in the world of bracketology.
The best of you sports coaching, you know that we got them. When it comes to analytic trends, you know he can spot them. First-class bracketology, if you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms.
Andy, good to have you on as usual. Looking forward to spending some quality time with you and the missus over the weekend tomorrow. And what is your bottoms line on the first week of college basketball?
Yeah, excited to have you guys. For those who missed it last week, Coach and I will be at an Alumni Association event at Madtree Brewery before the game. I think it starts about 4:30. We'll do a Q&A sometime around 5 or so. And then for those who are heading over to the game, you're already pretty close. For those who want to hang out and watch, we'll be there. Jay will also be with us. So should be a good time and looking forward to that. You know, really big week for IU basketball as a whole. If you look back to earlier in the week, the women's team got a huge win at Tennessee. And while Tennessee has not necessarily maintained their spot at the top of the women's game consistently over the years, still a really storied program and a good team this year. Just an awesome display by Terry Morin's group to go down and get a really decisive win down there. And tomorrow night is the men's chance to do the same thing, to pick up a big road win early in the season to really kind of jumpstart things as they move forward through the rest of the non-conference and a real chance to build some confidence there. So the women certainly showed the men's team how to do it, how to go on the road and get a big win, and excited to see if IU is going to be able to do the same. That'll obviously be a big topic for us tonight, looking ahead to the Xavier game, but a huge opportunity for IU and one I hope they can take advantage of.
Also with me, fresh off penning an article titled, quote, "Indiana finally looks like a Big Ten powerhouse again for the big lead," where he is senior writer. It's the original president of the Race Thompson Fan Club.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
All right, Ryan, it's time for your rant. What do you got for us this week?
You know, I have to echo what Andy said and congratulate the women's team. They're now 4-0. They blew the doors off Bowling Green tonight. But going down to Tennessee and getting that win, even though Tennessee isn't the power it used to be, still the 11th ranked team in the country, and they beat them by 12, and we're up bigger than that until the late stages. So hat tip to the women's team. It looks like it's going to be very good again this year. But really, this week has been all about focusing on the Xavier game. It's the first real test for Indiana this year, a true road game against a team that's probably, what, a top 35, top 30, 35 team right now. So it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge for those four senior starters to get this team where it needs to be, and it's going to be big for those young guys to get this experience. And it's going to be huge for Mike Woodson, quite frankly, to prove that he can win, that he can go on the road and win this type of game. And so really, I think this is going to be very telling. Obviously, we're not going to start to really judge this team as a whole until mid to late December, probably. But an early season test that certainly will be a measuring stick for where they're at right now and how confident you can be heading into that trio of huge games coming up over the next few weeks.
All right, here's what we have in store this week on Assembly Call Radio. Segment one, we're going to talk IU Xavier, the preview, and talk about some keys to victory. In segment two, we're going to talk about our early impressions of the Big Ten and college basketball after about 10 days of play. And we have some really good questions, as usual, from our community in segment three, our mailbag session. All of that coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. And now let's talk about our presenting sponsor. This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more. The bottom line is that Home Field has something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it will be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelley School of Business. What could be better than that? And I received some Christmas money early from a family member and immediately bought four more items to add to my incredible collection, a couple crew necks, a couple hoodies to wear throughout the winter. So go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME for 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. Okay, so here we go. First of all, we are going to make it official that the meetup will be the Purdue game. I believe that is February 4th, a Saturday. And more details will come soon, but we're working behind the scenes to provide a good time for everyone. So I know I look forward to seeing all of my co-hosts and all of our listeners, chat mob members, and people who just listen and show up. A good following in the last few years. So we appreciate that. Mark that on your calendar for, I believe, it's February 4th. Is that
right?
Yeah,
it's okay. The weekend of February 4th. So we'll be there. We'll do a live post-game show after the Purdue game. It is the Purdue game. So, yeah. You know, it's a big one. And it worked out that it was really the only weekend it completely worked for us this year, and it just happened to be Purdue. We did Purdue in 2020, and it didn't work out well. So let's hope this is a little better this time around.
I will be short of guaranteeing that it'll work out.
Okay.
I've seen them play. They have some good things, but we're a lot better. So I'm pretty positive it's going to be a good post-game show. So let's talk IU Xavier, guys. Andy, we'll come to you. Your thoughts, Xavier's 3-0, has played three teams that they should have beaten. This will be their first test under new coach Sean Miller. Your thoughts, general thoughts on Xavier?
Yeah, the big X factor, wild card coming into the game is the status of Colby Jones. So he's arguably their best player, certainly their best non-big guy, at least. He sprained his ankle in practice, was in a boot at their game I believe it was last night against Fairfield earlier in the week. So obviously with any college coach is not going to give away too much in terms of what the status is, but I think that'll go a long way to deciding. Xavier's not particularly deep. So anytime you lose one of your better players, it's not a good thing at all, obviously, but certainly on a team that doesn't have a ton of depth, that would be huge. He's really a big part of what they do defensively, and a guy that can really get to the rim. Was I think the most outstanding player in the NIT in the postseason NIT last year. So, yeah, that's really kind of the big storyline in terms of who will be available. Otherwise, when you really look from a personnel standpoint, it's kind of strength on strength with the big guys. You've got Zach Fremantle and Jack Nungy, who used to play. Is from Indiana, but used to play at Iowa. Didn't play a ton there. I think transferred at some point while Luka Garza was there, and has really had a successful couple or season and a few games, I guess you could say. Xavier Fremantle, a guy who's was a little bit in the doghouse with Sean Miller over in the offseason, got suspended indefinitely, but it didn't really last very long. Those two guys are pretty critical to what Xavier wants to do. Nungy in particular can step out and shoot it. But both guys have some limitations defensively, not a ton of depth in the front court. If you're able to get one or both those guys in foul trouble through, you know, Race, Trace, Malik Renew, whatever you have, I think that could go a long way to deciding the game as well. So those are really the big matchup and personnel related things to look at. Probably a couple schematic things we might want to talk about, but those are at least the biggest things that'll come to mind. And I think the biggest things to watch is kind of where those few matchups end up.
Ryan, your thoughts on going in and playing Xavier?
Well, it's as I said in the opening, it's a test. I mean, even if Xavier isn't at their best, they always have talent. And so even if they're not a top 25 team this year, which they're not yet, but you know, they're probably trending in that direction. I just think that it's big to go on the road, period. If you're Indiana at this point of the season, you're going to have to go on the road in a couple weeks to Kansas. This is a mini test for that, I think. And it's really for this Indiana team. And I wrote about it, you know, as you mentioned, Coach, I wrote about it this week at the Big Lead. This isn't about the opponent. It's about Indiana. You know, I think against North Carolina, it's a little bit about the opponent. Against Kansas, it'll probably be a little bit about the opponent. But against Xavier, if Indiana plays the way it's supposed to play, it should come out on top. You face Kansas and North Carolina and Arizona. You're going to have to make them do some things, and you're going to have to affect them and take them off their game. I don't feel that way about this game. I feel that if Indiana plays up to its capability, it should be a win.
So we had a question that I'm going to ask here in our community from Stephen Ragsdale. Said, I'm sure this is probably in a later segment, and Stephen, we moved it up, but I'm curious to hear more about their strengths and their weaknesses. Not very familiar with them since they weren't in the NCAA tourney last year. I thought Coach Adranya did a nice job, as usual, in his scouting report. I would always tell you, if you're part of our paid community, there's so much good information in there from in his film room, from post game and for the look ahead games. But it's going to be that battle. Their strength is on the inside, and with that Colby Jones, they do a lot of they play with some pace. According to the statistics, they are one of the quickest pace teams in college basketball. We'll see how Indiana guards the dribble handoffs and any pick and roll action at the top of the key. That'll be a key for them. But I think they're better offensively than they are defensively. And I think that's an advantage that plays into Indiana's hands, because I think they're going to have trouble guarding Indiana if Indiana comes and, as Ryan said, plays the way they can play. Easier said than done than on the road. But Andy, any other strengths or weaknesses that you see in this Xavier team?
Yeah, a couple things statistically, and it's really hard to get a read on it, particularly because while Miller has been the coach there, you know, been a while since he's been there. But from a pace perspective, and I thought another good potential preview would be the podcast on the Brink episode this week with Alex Bozich. He had Rocco Miller on, who does a really good job from a bracketology and a college basketball analysis perspective. They talked about this a little bit, and one of the questions was why this team may be playing a bit faster than maybe Sean Miller teams of the past. In looking at the numbers, they played Morgan State, I think it was the first game, who typically plays at a really fast pace. Not terribly shocking there. They were at a more, I guess I'll say, normal pace against Montana, and then sped up a little bit against Fairfield, which is different than what at least Fairfield's done recently. One of the things that Rocco cited was they have a transfer guard, Sully Boom, who started his career at San Francisco, then played at UTEP, a guy who likes to get up and down. So that may be pushing it there. So I'm not totally sold that they want to play as fast maybe as they have so far. But the other thing statistically where, if you want to look at weaknesses, turnover percentage, they've turned the ball over quite a bit. And that's really kind of across a number of guys, not really one or two guys responsible for it, but some big numbers there. And then on the offensive glass, the defensive glass in that regard, they've kind of struggled to control that. So those are areas that you might look for IU to be able to take advantage. At the same time, Xavier shot the ball really well. They haven't shot a ton of threes, but have shot it well when they have. And that becomes a little hard to gauge. Is that a function of your opponent, or is that really what you want to do? And I think that's where you get into some of these games where, based on playing three sub 200 KenPom teams, what did you really learn a whole lot differently about what they want to do offensively? But I thought, like you said, Coach Adrani talked a little bit about more schematically what they like to do. But at least statistically, the areas where IU might be able to exploit is getting them to turn the ball over, which can lead to some transition opportunities for IU. And also being able to get some putbacks, which lines up well with some of the things that IU's personnel excels at. So I think you feel pretty good there. And I would agree with what you said, Coach. I think the defense, particularly on the interior, is one where, like I said, Nungi and Fremantle, not the best defenders. And so if you throw waves of post guys at them like IU will, can you get at least one of them in foul trouble? That really puts Xavier in a bind.
Ryan, it sounds like a Race Thompson kind of game, you know.
Yeah, I think so.
Press block, you know. Go ahead. You have some comments on Xavier, and I have a question back for you when you're done.
Yeah, Indiana just has to control the 3-point line on defense.
I mean,
they're hitting 45.5% of their 3-pointers this year on how many they've taken. I guess 44. I mean, that's a decent clip on a decent number of makes. And you know, Nungi's hitting 62.5. Boehm is hitting 55.6. Like, you know, I mean, they can shoot it, and the guys they don't have a lot of guys who do shoot it, but the guys who do are good shooters. And so India has to close out and then be ready for long rebounds because Xavier's going to shoot the ball. So yeah, I would just say that I think that this may be the only team Indiana faces this year that, is worse on the free throw line than Indiana. Although let's say second game, 95% or whatever it was, but I do think the 3-point line's a concern, and they had trouble at times last year, not as a whole on the season, but there were individual games where they had real trouble closing out to the 3-point line and not chasing the ball and getting stuck and leaving guys open. So have to remain disciplined on defense to cover the 3-point line.
You know, the Kunkel kid is just one of those tough-nosed kids. He usually, I think, comes off the bench this year, and then he started the last game when the Jones guy was out. But he's one of those guys. He hit some big shots last year for him, a gritty guy. But Quang from our community asked, with his pace, since Xavier runs a 15-second offense, would X do his one-man full-court press? Will IU press at all? Would this be a good strategy to slow Xavier down? We'll start with you, Ryan. Do you think, you know, and Woodson likes to do that, especially out of dead ball situations and free throws, just eat some clock pressure type of stuff. Do you see that being something that would help Indiana here Xavier?
They do it all the time anyway. I mean, I don't think it'll be a set up press, but I think it'll be, you know, pick up the point guard inside the opposing free throw line. Like, I think, and hound him all the way across the court, try and get them off balance. And you do that not because you're trying to get a steal. You do that just to throw off the entry to their offense, the start of their offense, and make it, you know, as you said, make it take a little bit longer. Maybe if he wants to go to the right, you bump him off to the left, make him start the offense from the other side, take him off his strong hand so he's passing with a different hand. You just do it to harass them and to make them uncomfortable. It's not, you know, when you see that, it's not about getting a steal. I mean, if you get a steal, great, but that's not what it's for. When you set up a full court press with everybody doing it, that's more to speed the other team up and make them make bad decisions that could lead to a turnover. But when you see that point guard picks up a point guard full court, that's just to get the heart rate going for them and to harass and bother them and get them out of what they're doing.
Yeah, the other thing in that regard, they do have a freshman that they've been playing at point guard, and his turnover rate, again, three-game sample size, is over 30. So I think that's the kind of guy that maybe it's more matchup dependent of when certain guys are in the game. You really want to try to throw them out of any rhythm they have and force them into some mistakes. And I think some of that's dependent upon whether Jones plays or not. But Xavier's got it's an odd roster. They've got tons of seniors. Jones is a junior, and then everybody else is a freshman, it seems like. So part of that, I think, is, you know, coaching change over there, and you have some of that. But they do have some veteran guys who may not be rattled by that. But I think if you see, you know, the freshman point guard in there, maybe you get into him a little bit differently or try to give him some different looks to try to confuse him a little bit.
Yeah, it's one where when you go on the road, this is where I'm confident in Indiana. You win with defense. You win with defense. You stay connected defensively because the crowd's going to be loud. You handle that early rush that Xavier's going to give. I wouldn't be surprised to see the first 5 minutes be a little bit of a struggle because of the atmosphere and the energy. But you got to rely on your defense to get stops, a few easy buckets to get your offense going. But I think Indiana is clearly the better team on paper, and we should expect to win. Be disappointed with the loss. So. Okay, coming up on Assembly Call Radio, we go around the Big Ten in college basketball to give some early impressions of what we've seen so far. So stick with us.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of the Assembly Call.
Thanks, Coach Halls, for that introduction. Welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Coach Tonsoni here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. And our main segment tonight is brought to you by our new sponsor, True Blood Real Estate. Jim Trueblood is a longtime friend of Jared's and the founder and owner of True Blood Real Estate, where he's been helping people in Indiana buy and sell properties since 2006. And starting this season, True Blood Real Estate is the exclusive and official real estate partner of IU Athletics, with a team of talented agents to serve you in Bloomington and throughout Indiana. If you're looking to buy or sell an estate in Indiana, you need the experience, that True Blood advantage. Go to trueblood.com to learn more. That's trueblood.com, and tell them Assembly Call sent you. All right, the Big Ten has been in play, and I would say they're off to a pretty good start in the fact that the only loss that is not good is Minnesota's loss, and Minnesota's expected to be one of the bottom two teams in the Big Ten. There's been some incredible play. Jared shared with us early that his main impression is that Michigan State's going to be more of a problem if they stay healthy than most people thought, and I second that. They're not a huge, deep team, according to Jared, but it's one of those pesky Tom Izzo teams with great chemistry and toughness shooting. Jared says they will be a bear to play, so that's Jared's main impression. Andy, your main impression of Big Ten play here in the first 10 days?
You know, things have gone pretty well. I won't say there's been a lot of tests, but we always talk about this from a bracketology perspective, how important it is that the league does well to start. And right now, the league has three losses. One of them was Michigan State's loss to Gonzaga on the aircraft carrier by a point. And the other two have come from Nebraska and Minnesota, teams projected to be at the bottom of the league. So not really shocking that those teams are taking on losses, and both those losses were to Big East teams. Not sure how they decide who gets matched up with who in the Gabbett games. I think they typically try to match up some of the worst teams against one another, and maybe Nebraska was just the next one in line, but not a great matchup for St. John's. They got blown out tonight. But overall, you know, really good. I think there's reasons to like what you've seen from certainly Michigan State as being maybe better than what you thought. Iowa looked good last night winning at Seton Hall. And Michigan State, the big thing for me has been how Matty Sissoko has played. Really was kind of an afterthought as you really looked at their roster coming in. It has made a huge, huge leap through a couple games against really good competition. So, you know, typically good Michigan State teams have that one big guy who's, you know, rugged inside, can rebound it well and give you trouble defensively. And through a couple games, Sissoko looks like that guy. And I think that's something that elevates them a little bit to a different level. They've got good guard play. Hauser's kind of up and down, but being able to have a more reliable guy inside, something that really gives them a boost.
Ryan, your main thoughts on the early Big Ten action?
The only team I've watched twice is Michigan State, and they impressed me both times. Sissoko is one of the most improved players in the country, I think. He looks fantastic. And I just think that they have that depth. They play the right way. The way Izzo wants them to play. So they're the most dangerous team that I've seen so far. And I think they'll be good all year. And usually Izzo's teams can start slower and then pick it up as the year goes along. And they've played really well out of the gate.
You know,
they're going to be battle tested. That's for sure.
Yes.
Their schedule.
No
their schedule. They got
brutal.
Villanova tomorrow and then
Alabama coming up.
PK80. And yeah, they're going to have played the toughest schedule of anybody in the whole country.
For me, I've obviously seen Indiana and Purdue live. And then I've tried to catch as bits and pieces of as many games as possible. And I guess my main impression is that this league, regardless of who's on the roster, is extremely competitive and well coached. And you know, one of the questions we'll ask a little bit later is this going to be a down year because of the talent drain that left the Big Ten? That, you know, I'm not sure it's as bad of a drop off as everyone kind of thought it was. Your Illinois, your Michigans, those teams have all played as expected. I kind of liked what I saw from Ohio State, the little I saw them. Purdue is just Purdue. It's a more typical Purdue team. They don't have, you know, a Williams and an Ivy with all that athleticism and passing, but they have some gritty players led by Braden Smith, a 6-foot point guard out of Westfield who just took over the Marquette game at the end. But they also make freshman mistakes up there, and Purdue seems a little slow. Athletically as compared to what they have been and maybe what they need. But I think the league has done what they needed to do to get off to a start to try to maintain the number of bids they get in the tournament so they have a chance. But let's go back to you, Ryan. Has there been a positive surprise in the Big Ten, a player, a team, a coach, something that, you know, early on has caught your attention?
Well, as I mentioned, I think it's Sissoko for Michigan State. I just think he looks like a completely different player and is a lot more confident than he's been in the past. And, you know, this guy has never started a game in college basketball. And I thought he looked like a dominant big man against in their last game against Kentucky. You know, he's still a work in progress, I think. But, you know, he dropped 16 and had 8 rebounds and 2 blocks against one and 3 steals against one of the best teams, you know, most talented teams you're going to find in the country, and just did it naturally. It looked real good. So that's been the biggest takeaway. That's been the biggest one that's jumped out to me.
A big takeaway for me, and I don't know if it's a real surprise, is the Howard kid playing so well so early at Michigan. You assumed he was going to be good. And then just the number of freshmen that have come in. That, you know, Indiana's freshmen, we're just, you know, in love with those two. And then Purdue starting two freshmen. And Ohio State has a bunch of young guys that are coming in. And so if the league is going to have a solid league, I think those freshmen have to play above and beyond their years. But I think that speaks again to the coaching staffs and the programs recruiting, you know, good quality players from all over the country, but a lot of them from the Midwest. But you know, not totally surprised, but it's good to see some young talent coming into the to Big Ten to replace some that was lost. Andy, any surprises or what stood out to you individually as the season got started?
I can't believe, Coach, that you did not use this opportunity to touch on your boy Micah Shrewsbury. Penn State, top 20 in offensive efficiency. They're shooting 46% from three. I don't know if that's just,
it's not a surprise. That's why the question was a surprise.
But can they? fair enough.
I've been doubting them all along.
But you know, I think they're a team that it would be well off of everybody's radar. They'd beat a good Furman team tonight and play Virginia Tech tomorrow. So a chance for them to pick up a couple wins early, and they would really, if you're looking at teams in the league who were picked. It's certainly outside of the group that people projected to be in line for a tournament bid, they would be a surprise from my perspective. A little bit hard to look at too many of the other teams just because most of them haven't played anybody yet. For the most part, Michigan State's the clear exception to that. But I watched some of the Michigan Eastern Michigan game, they let Eastern Michigan hang around, but played well down the stretch. And you know, I think Iowa's going to be interesting to watch. Seton Hall, new coach. Different situation there, but you know, winning by 16 points on the road is really impressive for Iowa. The offense, to the surprise of absolutely no one, has been really good. So it still remains to be seen what they're going to look like when they get into tougher competition on a more regular basis. And they got a few cupcakes left, but their schedule ratchets up a little bit. They got Duke and Iowa State in early December, so. It'll be interesting to see what they do, but some fairly positive early returns for them in their game at Seton Hall.
One thing that's not surprising to me is when I turn on Iowa and see the coach and the players all complaining to the officials up and down the floor. So I guess the players kind of get that from their head coach. But
they're a product of their environment. What are you going to do?
Tony Perkins looked nice. Like, you know, I didn't know how much of an impact he would have, but in the time I've seen him, I thought Tony Perkins was impressive. But man, he was all into the officials and everything. So you have that. So, and just wrapping up this way too early, you know, predictions and talk about the Big Ten. Are we buying or selling the fact that the Big Ten's going to, you know, not be as good a conference? Or, you know, I think the thought that I got from a lot of predictions and writers was that the Big Ten was going to have a big fall. So are we buying and selling that it's been a big drop off? Andy, your thought, and does any of the early play, again, it's way too early to say definitively, but early on, where are you headed in buying and selling a huge drop off in Big Ten? Maybe the numbers of bracket teams too low. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'd probably give a more confident answer maybe after next week and some of the, you know, holiday tournaments that are out there. I don't know that my opinion has changed in terms of thinking that the league has one of the top end teams in the country. It did probably reaffirm and maybe even bolster my thoughts on how deep the conference is. I think you've got a lot of really, really solid teams, maybe more than what you thought going in. And if the league can continue, again, through the handful of high major games that they've had and really the lack of bad losses, which stands out against conferences like the, you know, the Pac-12 and the ACC, you know, to that extent, they've really avoided those bad losses. But if you can pick up some more wins, you really it's kind of the rising tide that lifts all boats when you get to the net and things like that. And so that really gives you a great chance to get a lot of teams in the tournament, because at that point, almost every game is a high quality opportunity for you to get a win. And certainly the volume of losses can hurt you, but just losing tough games to other good teams, even at home, doesn't kill you. So in that regard, I think it's on a good trajectory to, you know, I think I projected eight teams in, maybe you can get a ninth. as you go through and do it that way, if some of these teams really are able to sustain what they've done and the league doesn't stub its toe in bye games and in some of these other situations. So overall, probably a little more positive than I was to start, but I still don't think you have an elite team in the Big Ten at this point, based on what we've seen so far.
I think you're right from a bracketology standpoint that the conference winning the games they're supposed to, and maybe just losing again to the Big East here or there, the bottom teams, that lifts the conference. So I'm kind of selling the idea that there's a huge drop off this year in the Big Ten. I think it is going to look different than what it was in previous years. But again, I go back to the coaching and I go back to the young talent that's in the league. And I think that if they take care of business, they're definitely looking at 8 or 9 teams in the tourney, and which 8 or 9 is going to be up to injuries and, you know, a few breaks here and there. Ryan, just general thoughts. I know it's early, but on the Big Ten's depth or quality of play.
It always evens out for the Big Ten. Every time somebody writes the obituary for it as the best conference, team surprise. And I just think that's going to happen again this year. I just see that there's depth. They're not going to have bad losses. You know, people say like, well, there's not as much depth in the Big Ten as there's been. You know, a lot of guys left, a lot of players left. That happened to every other conference too. I mean, it's not like it's unique to the Big Ten. And so I think that people just need to recognize that every year the Big Ten winds up being one of the two top conferences, no matter what. And that's going to happen again this year. There's going to be depth. You're right. Maybe they don't have an elite team this year, a team that is going to be a national, picked as national title contender all year long. But the conference is still going to be a meat grinder, as it always is. And it's going to be incredibly difficult to get through. And you might have a surprise champion at the end who just manages to survive. We've seen that happen a couple times over the last decade, where a surprise team that maybe had the easier schedule winds up with it because it's an unbalanced schedule. So that has a lot to do with who wins.
And maybe, too, we see a little more success in the tournament, too, if you have, you know, some teams that aren't thought to be successful
Let's not go that far, Coach. They're still going to cash out in the tournament. Let's be real.
It's a new year. It's a couple years past COVID, and it's back to normal. Now the Big Ten can at least get a couple more teams into the Sweet 16. So, Gavitt Games, last question here in segment. You like it, not like it for the Big Ten to play the Big East? And I know we also have the ACC tournament, but – do we like it? Ryan, start with you. Yes or no?
Yeah, I like it. It's just
that was
good.
A resounding.
Resounding
approval from Ryan.
Well, here's the thing. I would rather have them do a tournament I know they would love to, but do a tournament like Maui or something where you go off and play a couple games and replicate that tournament sort of atmosphere early in the season. I think that's the most valuable thing you can do. Obviously you can't go to Maui every year because everyone wants to go. It's about every 5 years or so. And quite frankly, I think it's lame that Indiana didn't actually get to go to Maui the last time they're in the Maui Invitational, but that's a whole other podcast. I think that I like it because it's good competition, and anytime you have good competition early in the season, I think it winds up being a positive, win or lose. But if I had my preference, I would love to do a tournament type setting, and Indiana doesn't really do a lot of those. So I prefer that, but
I agree with you. I don't mind playing these teams, but when there's only 8 matchups, I would like to see if you're going to do it, let's get everyone involved. And I don't know what the contract was or why it was only set to 8 matchups a year.
Yeah, and everybody only plays a certain amount of times in a few years. That was going to be my general point. It's a means to setting up some decent matchups, but it doesn't feel like an actual event.
Right.
Whereas the Big Ten ACC, pretty much, you know, there's one odd team left out, but on the ACC side. But otherwise, everybody plays. And that feels like an actual event. This just seems like a convenient way to schedule games for TV, which is ultimately all the other one is too. But at least it makes it feel a little bit less that way. So I think if you could find ways to get more teams involved or more teams involved on a regular basis, challenge becomes you don't have, you know, the same number of teams. You're, you know, Big East, I think they had 11 now. I want to say, and Big Ten's got 14. So it just becomes, you know, you're leaving three teams out. But at least if you got 11 games, you know, somebody's always going to win and do things like that. But I think because of people playing in other, exempt tournaments and things like that, you can't get everybody to play every year. And so that, I think, undermines a little bit of the event-related nature of it.
Well, two marquee games tomorrow night, Indiana at Xavier and Michigan State Villanova. I'm not sure where that's at. Andy, do you know real quick?
I think it's at Michigan State.
At Michigan State. So
I will double check, but I think that's what it is.
And then that'll be the Gavitt Games. And then Feast Week starts next week with all of the exempt tournaments. It's just a great time to watch basketball. And as we have all said here, we'll know more about the Big Ten and college basketball here in about 2 weeks. But stick with us. We'll be up to answering your questions after the break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey, it's Romeo Langford. What's the only thing better than hitting a game winner to beat Wisconsin? Celebrate it with friends afterwards. Join Jarrett, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Hello, everyone. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. It's now time for our mailbag. All questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. And before we get to the questions, there's just a lot of good comments back and forth from our members, some good questions for us. And as I mentioned, Coach Adranya's film room and scouting reports for each game. I have a Coach's Corner segment where this week we broke down a small video on Trey Galloway's shooting form. We have a lot of good things. So go to assemblycall.com/community. We keep it a paid community so that it's just real Hoosier fans in there. But please join us. There's a lot to the community. So our first question is from Allie, and here we go. It's a doozy, so we're going to throw this one to the guys. Allie asks, or says, or whatever, how big of a scheming turd was Sean Miller to actually get busted by the NCAA? Just seems like there have been so many people going against the NCAA rules for so long without any repercussions. For him to actually get fired for it makes me wonder how much jeopardy he actually put his whole school on repeatedly because of inflated ego. I already have an idea of how big of a loser he is after his idiotic comments about Hoosier fans having, quote, unrealistic expectations, end quote, because his brother crapped the bed at Indiana. But doing minimal research of this dude makes me wonder why anyone would hire that level of unethical toxicity at the price of winning a few basketball games. If it's not clear, I want this team to steamroll Xavier, but mainly Sean Miller.
Do we have the applause soundbite?
I don't. That's in Jared's soundboard, but way to go. Way to go, Allie. All right.
I don't have much to add to that.
Yeah, who wants to take that on. Allie's question?
I mean, ultimately, I'm not sure there was a question in there, so I don't know what there is to really say. I think what has been proven over and over again from a college basketball perspective is that winning cures everything and makes you forget a lot of things about somebody that you might not have liked. I think from a Xavier perspective, certainly brings them back to, you know, they wanted to move on from Travis Steele, and Miller, somebody who knows the program, perform well there. But yeah, it was pretty brazen in some of the things that, you know, you hear about Arizona and different things like that. I think, he's not the only one that I would put in that category, by any stretch. And I think on the other hand, you see what the punishment of the, you know, IARP or whatever that process is called, the NCAA put in place that basically punishes no one. So if you know you're not going to get punished, I guess,
and with NIL now, it's all open season.
Well, now it doesn't matter, but yeah. I mean, even for the ones who were breaking what rules there were in the past, there's really been no repercussions for it. So I think that's fairly typical of college sports, whether you like it or not, that those things are quickly forgotten in the name of winning and bringing somebody in who they think can win. But yeah, anyway, I'm not sure there was a question, but that really,
Allie, I struggle. Because sometimes there's really good coaches who do really stupid things and hurt their programs, and hopefully coach will learn from it after then he gets beat by Indiana. You know, there's just a lot of cases where coaches just do the wrong thing to win. But I struggle with it because I appreciate what they do from an X and O standpoint. And we all have one of those in our history. That some people can't get past and some people can. The only reason I get past some of these coaches doing some unethical things is because hopefully they stop doing unethical things and get back to what made them a good coach in the first place. So the other thing I would say, too, is with any comments about Indiana, you want Indiana to go and play Indiana basketball. You don't want them to go beat Archie Miller's brother or because the other coach – had some comments, because that leads to that fake hustle, false stuff. You can only go to the well, the motivational well of, you know, bulletin board material is so widely used. But if you have to rely on bulletin board material every game you play, then you don't have much of a program. You want to go to Xavier and play Indiana basketball because you're better and kick their ass because you're better, not because you want to get back at what a coach says. I think that's part of the problem with our football program. They're always looking for a chip, always looking for a chip, always looking for a chip, instead of just taking a chip and knocking it off the shoulder of the guy across the line of scrimmage. You played a game of basketball. You don't go and hold grudges. That's for us fans. I have no problem with you, Allie, whatsoever. There are people that I'd love to beat too. But I'm saying when you run a program, if you talk about all that kind of stuff for the guys, I don't think that's productive. Anything else on Allie's awesome, wonderful, motivational?
Submit more comments, Allie.
Yeah. Thank you. So we go to Mike. Mike, hard to follow that. Sorry, but you're just in the order. So Mike Stem says, is there a reason why Logan isn't getting a few more minutes? What's the spread for the Xavier game? I haven't seen that yet. So those are two questions. Go ahead, Ryan.
The spread is Indiana by one, last I saw, and an over-under is at I don't know where I saw that. I think it was like 145, 140, 143 maybe was the last I saw it. As for Duncan, there's two words. Malik Renew is the reason he's not getting more minutes. Is Duncan, you know, without Renew there, Duncan would probably be the backup post guy along with Jordan Geronimo, but Malik Renew exists. And so I think that they would like Duncan to play, to get some more minutes, to be able to go in there and be more of a pure center. But I just think that honestly, they have the guys right now. They have the horses, and I think the hope for him is he develops. He, teammates commented on how much better he got in the off season a lot. That came up a lot when they were discussing the offseason and who was doing what. I think the hope is that next year he's a guy who can play a lot with Malik in there. Maybe make Malik your four, and you've got him at the five. And let's be real, to get to the NBA, Malik's going to have to be able to step out on the floor and hit shots. And so that would leave, you know, if he was more of an inside out guy, that would leave Duncan inside. So I think there's a path there for him to become a really effective player, but it's, you know, it's going to take some time. He's got some development. Yeah.
Jim, yeah. I think ahead, it's, a lot of that's just trying to, you know, you see IU, what they've done in the rotation so far, kind of playing guys in pairs. And I think we know how Race and Trace complement each other. I think Geronimo and Renew so far have complemented each other well. And I don't think you could pair up Duncan and Renew at this point. Could you maybe pair Duncan and Geronimo? Yes, but that's at the expense of getting minutes for Renew, like Ryan said. So I think that's where the challenge comes. I think I saw the spread was 1.5, but it's right around that one and a half mark.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in the last.
Yeah, I pulled up one thing on my phone while I saw the question in here. So looks like it's in that general range.
Jim Tom Hoosier asks, now that you've seen the team play a couple of games, have your expectations for the season changed? I'll start out. Yeah, I feel a lot better. Very cautious heading in to the season. And I think I'm still not buying that we're Final Four team level, that conversation, or top 10 team that some people have said. But I do think that my belief in the roster, as I said in the banner moment, is a lot better now, seeing the freshman play, seeing how Tamar has improved and everyone, and Trey Galloway's shot, and just the overall makeup of the rotation. I'm a lot more comfortable now knowing that it's going to take a pretty good effort to beat Indiana on a given night, not a fact where we have to play up above and beyond our talent. Ryan?
Yeah, I think that the biggest revelation for me out of these two games wasn't just the talent that they have and the depth and all of that. I mean, that we kind of knew on paper coming in. It's the focus. I mean, these guys are very focused, and it seems like everybody's got the same goal, and it looks like they've been playing together for a while. Now, the four seniors have played together before, but I think that it just looks like these guys are connected on a different level than we've seen in a while, and it feels like the attitude feels like they know what they are capable of and are trying to get there. And that is what I think is the most interesting part of this, and has been the most heartening, is that they all look like they have a similar common goal.
I think from my perspective, they probably raised a little bit just because Renew and Huchefino have played so well. A lot has been made of the notion that this is just the same, you know, running it back with the same guys from last year, and why do you expect it to be so much better? And I think there were, obviously based on the recruiting rankings, there were high expectations for those guys, but I think they've, again, two game sample size plus a couple exhibition games, so maybe four games, have exceeded that, and I think reinforce how well the guys who go to these top end prep schools can really integrate pretty seamlessly into college basketball and not look out of place. To this point, they haven't looked out of place. We'll see if we say the same thing after tomorrow. It's a first really big test for them. And are there some nerves and are there some things like that maybe they don't play as well as they have in these other games? Certainly possible, but I think those guys raise the ceiling because they just give you different dimensions that you didn't have last year. One, in terms of having another guy who can make plays with the ball in his hands, and the other, a guy who really can allow you to stick to what you want to do offensively by trying to get the ball inside, but also give Trace a bit more rest and ease the burden on him while not feeling like the, you know, things drop off a cliff from a talent perspective as soon as he hits the bench.
And that leads to a question from Joel Huperazzi. Do you see a much more confident IU team, or how much more they seem, and how much does confidence play a role in winning? Andy, we'll come back to you and then back around to Ryan.
They certainly look confident. They look really together, I would say, so far. And it's easy to – this is the part where not playing a lot of games and not facing a lot of adversity yet makes it hard to tell. It's easy to feel good about – how you're playing
30.
And whenever, but you know, and like, oh, I love the guy next to me because we just beat the crap out of somebody by 30. When things start to go sideways, as they will, Do you maintain the togetherness that seems to be there? The optimistic part of me says, yeah, they'll be able to figure that out and make those things work. But I think based on what we've seen, which is really all we can judge at this point, they seem to be a confident bunch. And I think that, you know, certainly better than the alternative. We'll see as they go through some of these other games how they're able to maintain that confidence. But, you know, for now, so far, so good.
Ryan, do you see a more confident team?
I see a team that's more confident in each other. They've been doing a lot of making the extra pass because they're confident the other guy can do his job. And it's not just Xavier Johnson and Trace Jackson Davis in a two-man game and everybody else standing around watching. Like, this is the team is confident. I think they know, as I said earlier, they know how much talent they have. They know what they're capable of, and they're playing to that. Andy's right. It's easy to be confident when you're blowing people out. I mean, when this team gets punched in the mouth, we'll see. Can Xavier Johnson keep his head and not argue with officials or get into it with the opposing point guard and just keep his head and focus on the task at hand? We'll see. I mean, we don't know, but just from what we've seen so far, the attitude, the way they move together, the way they play off each other, it's incredibly positive for Indiana. And it's going to be – I mean, this is – on paper, I've said it's one of the most talented teams we've seen in Indiana in two decades. I mean, straight up talent-wise, it's as good as we've seen. How that gets deployed and how that talent, you know, how they play together over the length of a long season is anybody's guess. And how they're coached and how they're positioned and are they put into the right spots, all of that. But the thing that I have seen is these guys know how good they are. They really do. And the ones who don't are starting to figure it out real fast. And I will say, I wrote this last year about Mike Woodson. The one thing he does is have faith in his players. And he makes them have faith in themselves. And you're really seeing that bear out. Some of the guys who've been in the program a couple of years, they know their roles a little bit better this year, and they have confidence in themselves because they know they've got, you know, their coach has confidence in them. That was, we heard all last year. So yeah, I think they're confident, and I think they're confident in the guys next to them. And I think they're confident in the mission they're on, and we'll see what they do. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but a lot of good signs have been there from the beginning.
I like the word connected. I've said in a couple shows, times that I've been on, when I've been down there early, they seem really focused. I forget which one of you two said that, but focused. I've heard focus come from you guys, connected, and I'm going to add the word trust. I think they trust the next pass to be made. You know, Renu comes down in the film clip, both Coach Adrani and I, of Trey Galloway hitting the shot. Was Renu got the rebound, ran down the floor, saw a screen opportunity for a flare screen, and Galloway hits a shot. So I trust, connected, focus, it all has to come from confidence, and that helps. So just a couple more questions. Kent Beckham, Beckman, asked, who determined the four teams that played in the Tournament of Champions? What criteria was used, and how long until IU gets included in games like this? Also, the aircraft carrier game. Ryan, how does that get scheduled? That's a contractual thing, right?
Which one, the aircraft?
Well, the aircraft or the Tournament Champions? Of Champions is...
Yeah. I don't know how they do it. It's basically they pick four teams that are good for television, quite frankly. But I don't know if it's...
I think they've signed a long-term multi-year contract, right, Andy?
They have. I was trying to look a little bit to see what the origin was, but the teams have not changed since I started doing it.
Yeah, no, it's always the
same. And it makes sense because at the time they did it, they started it up in, I guess the first one was in 2011. And it was initially a way, Norlander went into some of the scheduling mechanisms of why it falls when it does. But it had been initially viewed as a way to really kick off the college basketball season. And as we saw this year, I mean, it was, you know, like, you know, instead of getting off to a fast start, your car sputtering to get out of the parking lot for 20 minutes. But it doesn't, anything that I've looked at as I've just tried to look here doesn't say necessarily other than, you know, brings four of the all-time best college basketball programs and coaches. And if you think about where, you know, IU really was at the timeline that this started up, it wasn't necessarily in a place where you were, you know, at the top of the national consciousness to be able to play. So I think some of that may be unfortunate timing. Now, the aircraft carrier and things like that, I'm less sure how that comes together. IU played in the game against Kansas in Hawaii some number of years ago. And I think I think a lot of the teams that get involved in those things are very excited to do them again, because it's such a unique experience to be able to go and, you know, spend that time with the Navy. And I think Gary Parrish talked about the experience this week of guys going to the one that they have at the, I think it might be at the Naval Academy there, and kind of some of the experiences they go through. So I think those become fairly popular for teams to get to, but in terms of how they pick, I mean, it's all about getting a good game for TV, quite honestly. So I think the more that IU finds itself high in the rankings, the more of those kinds of opportunities that they can open up in that regard. As you go forward, I think it's just a matter of consistently being toward the top of the sport where you're a big draw, for some of those kinds of games. At least that's my impression. Champions Classic, I don't think they have any plans to swap teams out. So that ship has kind of sailed, but there might be some other opportunities out there.
The military games are great for the programs to do. My son was a manager for Tom Crean and IU, and was on that trip to Hawaii. And that you know, he just thoroughly enjoyed that experience. And I also think it was somewhat, Indiana was locked into the Crossroads Classic. There was what was the one called with UCLA, North Carolina, now Ohio State got in. There was some talk that Indiana was maybe asked to participate in that, but they couldn't get out of the contract there. So I think that's part of the reason why Indiana wanted to get out, is to seek out more opportunities to add quality opponents in the schedule, but maybe also get into some of these types of games. So last one. George Beidel. George, I hope I pronounced your last name correct. What would your minute breakdowns be in non-bye games or very competitive games, now that you've seen the guys play as well, several different lineups? I'm going to tell you, I like the nine-man rotation with the two posts. And your ninth man's going to be limited for me, maybe 10 to 12, 14 minutes, and that could be anyone depending on who you're playing. But if you can keep Race's minutes in the low TJD in the low 30s, and then sprinkle everyone else around that, I think you're going to see high 20s for X and Hood Schifino. And again, just if Miller Kopp's hitting shots, you're going to see more of him. If Trey Galloway is hitting or needed defensively, you're going to see more of him and Tamar. But I think it comes down to, you basically have two or three guys in the 28 to 30. Those are your main guys. Then you have everyone else just over 20 to 24. And then you have a couple guys in the 14, 15 range is generally how you break it down. Andy, any thoughts on minute breakdown?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that'll be interesting to see when we get into some of these games is Renew's minutes, quite honestly. It goes back a little bit to what we talked about before in terms of pairing these guys up. I don't know how much you'll see of Trace and Renew playing together. And if you believe that those two aren't going to be on the floor a whole lot, you're basically divvying up 40 minutes between those two guys. So if you play Trace 30 minutes, that means you're only playing Renew 10. Is that enough based on what you've seen from him? Or do we see them try to play those two guys together? Renew did step out and shoot it a little bit. Maybe you see that a little bit more over the course of the season, where at least for a couple minutes of overlap, you've got those guys in there. But I largely agree with what Coach said. I think you're going to see lots of minutes from Hood Schifino and Xavier Johnson. Team seems committed to keeping at least one of those guys on the floor the whole time. And then from there, I think it's a lot of matchup dependent stuff and who's playing well. As you kind of mix and match some of the other guys, I think you may see more of a Race Thompson in certain scenarios and Jordan Geronimo. You may see, as Coach said, you know, maybe a little more Trey Galloway than Miller Kopp, depending upon what you need. But I think those are the ones you kind of set in stone, and then you figure out how to shake the minutes out around them.
Yeah, I agree. I think Coach nailed it. I just think that it's – and Andy, you mentioned something. I think it's going to be matchup dependent. I think it's going to depend on flow of the game too. I mean, if you're up big, you don't need Miller Kopp out there shooting threes. You need Trey Galloway's defense maybe a little more. You know, I mean, you kind of switch it. If Jalen Hood Schifino is not defending well, you might put Trey out there for that. You have better driving lanes. You might put Tamar out there. And, you know, it's really going to depend on how a game is going and, you know, what you need on the floor and what the matchups are on both ends.
Well, that's going to do it for our show this evening. Thanks for joining us. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. Until then,
take it from me, Juwan Morgan. Keep your elbows in, eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
And I kind of shut off my music. But you get a little reprieve here. So, again, Xavier, tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, post-game show. Ryan, you going to be on?
I am.
All right, Jared and Ryan will take care of that. If you're in the Cincinnati area, come out to Mad Tree Brewing to see Coach Tonsoni and Andy Bottoms talk some more basketball.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Hey, the show's over. Here I come, Coach Tonsoni.
Oh, boy.
Never gets old.
No. No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Good
not.
Show, fellas.
Yeah,
good. Hour one. 7.
Thanks for joining, everybody. What's everybody
game.
Doing after the weekend? Are you guys doing anything next week for the holidays?
Quick visit to my mom on Thursday.
Yeah, we're going to my mom's, so we'll be there for a few days.
Yeah, I'm going out to the desert again for a week. So not the middle of nowhere. There's a town.
I love that you describe it as a way in which
he's
you're
some oasis out in the desert.
Wandering through the desert.
Yep. It's a walkabout, really. It's no, we've done that the last couple of years. Just gone out for a week, going with the parents, and we have some family friends out there. So I'll be trying to chime in from there. So, yeah, looking forward to it. It's very quiet out there, and I don't play golf, and there's a lot of golf. So you got to find stuff to do to entertain yourself.
Jack, I just got to the chat. We're not looking at the chat often. I just turned it on. Jack R. asked me, I'm not coaching this year, Jack. I stepped back and going to do more work for our show here behind the scenes and in the community and spending some time going to some college basketball games. So no practice for me this week, and I'm okay. I miss it a little bit.
And I mean, so be there on February 4th.
February 4th, definitely will be there. No conflicts.
Mark it down, folks. Come show up, say hi.
Yep.
We're looking forward to it. I've been eager to get back since we were there last year. It was a lot of fun. We came in after the blizzard last year, right after. The year before, or 2020, we came in and the blizzard hit the day I tried to leave. So it's always right around when we're there. It's always right around.
So plan accordingly. Put a blanket
get your
in your
snow
car.
Boots out.
It's gonna be snowy no matter what, and very cold.
Put some blankets in your car, chains on your tires, whatever you need to do, because you may end up stranded.
And make sure you save some money so you can buy us some beers. I mean, that'd be nice.
That's the most important thing.
That is, you know, a little Christmas savings money.
Yeah.
A little extra work.
Coach is thirsty.
Oh, goodness gracious. All right,
guys.
All right, sounds good. Well, Coach, I will see you tomorrow. You guys have a safe trip.
You guys have fun.
I'll text you when I take off, but we should try to get there about 3:30, 4 o'clock, depending on how long Jay needs to load up the car when I stop to pick him up and how mediocre the drive is. I do have Taylor Swift Essentials on my Apple Music for Jay.
Okay,
yeah, good.
That's good
for him. Good. No, so, you guys take pictures, video, everything. We want to see. We'll check it out.
There's a non-zero chance I won't do any of those things. But
well, have somebody else who's there do that.
We'll have Jen and Amy take care of the pictures.
We'll post it on Assembly Call Twitter, if Twitter still exists.
It's going down, I think, tonight, they say. The technical team all resigned.
Outages are through the roof right now. Yeah,
if you believe what's being said, right?
That's what happens when you let your entire engineering team walk away.
Yeah. 1,000 people walked out today after his thing, and most of them on some of the technical teams.
Yeah, not good.
It's bad not coaching.
Not great.
All right, guys.
All right.
Peace.
See you guys.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.